certainly good to be here with you this morning. I always appreciate the opportunity to preach God's Word and know the responsibility that comes with that. When Uncle Brett asked me to preach a few days ago, I told him at that time that I didn't have much of a voice. I'm kind of on the tail end of a cold, and it hasn't completely came back, so we may either preach to the end of the lesson or whenever that goes, that will be it. But I do appreciate very much this opportunity, and hope that the things that we go over, the things that we're going to study this morning, can be beneficial to us. The subject that I want to talk about for a few moments this morning is the question, is it possible for young people to be spiritually minded? And the reason that I want to talk about this is because I think that there is a concept, there is an idea, that whether it is spoken aloud, written down, or said amongst ourselves, there is an idea that sometimes creeps into the minds of even Christians that young people cannot be spiritually minded, that it is too difficult, that there are too many temptations, too many struggles that young people face in this world, that there has to be a time in which they are wild, that they go into the world, they do these things, and they hope, we hope and pray that it's just not bad enough that they face the consequences for the rest of their life. Now, most parents and older people, of course, wish this wasn't the case and wish this didn't happen. But in the back of their mind, they almost think it's kind of inevitable. They kind of are going to have to go through these struggles, go through these hard times. There is no doubt, and I am not denying at all, that there are certain temptations and certain struggles that young people face when they are younger that are very difficult. But the idea that they are going to have to fall into these temptations, that they are going to have to struggle with these sins and constantly face these battles without any type of help and that there's no relief, is a farce. And what we want to look at this morning is a few examples, first of all, of some people that were spiritually minded at a young age. We know that parents, of course, hope and pray and want the absolute best for their children. They want and understand that they are the future of the church and that without them growing in truth and knowledge, that there is going to be a great struggle down the road. But we do know that there are certain temptations, certain struggles that young people face, and we want to look at some of the examples in the Bible. First thing that I want to look at is the example of David. In the book of 1 Samuel, in the 17th chapter, starting in verse 37, it says, "Moreover, David said, 'The Lord will deliver me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, or has who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine,'" talking about, of course, Goliath. Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." If you skip down to verse 42, it says, "And when the Philistine, Goliath, looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good-looking. So the Philistine said to David, 'Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?' And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, 'Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field.' Then David said to Philistine, 'And I want you to picture a younger person going against a giant in the midst of all of his peers, in the midst of all the Israelites. He said, "You come to me with the sword, with the spear, and with the javelin. But I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands.'" Now, David, we know, a man after God's own heart, was probably one of the best role models that young people can look to as a source of faith, a source of strength, because we see in his life and his example, that's exactly what he showed. There are times that we face battles in our life. Do we go against giants in the midst of an army as a young person? No. But do we face temptations at school, maybe at college, at work, whatever it is, where someone questions what you believe? And I think the sad thing, and the reason I think this is sad is because I've been in this same boat, is here we have an example of David going against Goliath in the midst of everyone saying that he could not do it. And he's telling Goliath, "You know what? You may come at me with sword and spear, but today the battle is going to be won because of the Lord. And yet we have a hard time talking to those friends that we have, our acquaintances, about the gospel. We have a difficult time telling them why we don't drink, why we don't dance, why we don't do certain things, because those are sensitive subjects. Because those are the subjects that we may think, you know, if we talk about this, we may end up losing our friendship. And we're more worried about that. Here David was, and he went against this a giant with a slingshot and talked about God the entire time. The other example I want to look at is the example of Daniel. Many of you know this example of Daniel in the book of Daniel, of course, in chapter 1. Goes 3 through 8, talking about some of the delicacies that they were offering to him. But I want you to look at what he says, what it says in verse 8. It says, "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself." The key word that I want to look at there is the fact that he purposed in his heart. There are decisions, and I can assure you, young people here, there are going to be temptations that come about that you can prepare yourself for. You know, based on what you've faced in the past or based on what you've heard from people, that there are certain temptations that are going to come up, and you have to prepare yourself. You have to know that there is going to come a time in which those instances occur. How am I going to get out? What am I going to do? He purposed in his heart. He had his mind made up beforehand. What about the example of Timothy? Paul is constantly talking, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I don't have them on the chart. Also in the book of Daniel, in chapter 3, we know this story very well. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, these people that stood up and decided not to bow. It says there in Daniel chapter 3, if you want to flip over there, starting in verse 16. "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, 'O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter.'" This is him questioning who their God was and who is going to deliver them. "If that is the case, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from this burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up." Verse 19, "Then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression on the face on his face changed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. And he commanded certain mighty men of valor who were in the army to bind them and cast them into the fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments, and they were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace." We know the story. "Even the men that threw them in were killed and consumed because the fire was so hot." And what did they do? They stood up in the midst of all of these people. They stood for truth, and they said that God would deliver them, and we know that he did. One of the interesting points about that is in verse 18. They said, but if not, let it be known to you. Whether we fall or not, whether this fire consumes us, know this, that our God is able to deliver us. And we see that the example through their life that whether or not they knew that they were going to be delivered, they still stood for truth. They didn't give in. But yet we give in time and time again on some of the more simple issues, or some of the less life-threatening, I should say. What about, Timothy, 1 Timothy chapter 4. We know that Timothy, those of you that are familiar with him, was considered to be a son by Paul. Paul cared very much for Timothy and tried to instruct him in the ways of righteousness and truth, but he was always giving him pointers. I always think of it as, and you young people know of maybe somebody older in your life that are just giving you little tidbits of information, things that you need to be mindful of. In 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 12, he says, "Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word and conduct, in love and spirit, in faith and in purity." 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 22, he says, "Flee also youthful lust, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace, and with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart." There are I think that sometimes young people don't understand or don't comprehend the influence that they can have on older people. You know, I'm not real old, but I don't consider myself to be very young anymore. But I also know that I can see a good balance between younger people in their adolescence, going through their teenage years, and even college, that are living righteously and the encouragement that can be obtained from them. I promise you, young people here, that there is nothing that can be more precious and more heartwarming for your parents to see than you living a righteous life. They don't care. They want to encourage you in those things that may be secular, the sports and college and degree and things like that, and that's fine if you keep them in their place. But if your parents obey the gospel and they are Christians and they live a righteous life, they want to see you do the same. And when they see you stand up in the midst of peer pressure, or they see you do certain things or preach the truth or be kind to your brothers and honor your parents, those are the true things that bring them joy. And know that. You have to remember that. You have to know that all of those things that are in the world, they're great and they're good in and of themselves, but you have to honor God. In order to do that, you have to obey your parents. The last example that I want to look at, as far as the Bible examples, is the example of Joseph. In Genesis chapter 39, and starting in verse 7, I want to read that. Genesis chapter 39 and verse 7. I don't think that there is a better example of a young person fleeing the temptation of lust of the flesh than the example of Joseph and the position that he was put in. Verse 7 says, "And it came to pass that after these things, his master's wife," talking about Potiphar's wife, "cast longing eyes on Joseph and said to him, 'Lie with me.' But he refused and said to his master's wife, 'Look, my master does not know what is with me in this house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me except you, because you are his wife. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?' So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or be with her." Now, there are so many points to bring out just out of these few verses. I just want to bring out a few. But and as the story goes, we know that she consistently tried, to the point that she grabbed his jacket, he ran away, he was accused and thrown into prison, and that's how he ended up in Egypt. But the points that I want to look at here, the first thing is that the very first time that she came to him, he answered her, and he said, "Look, my master has trusted me with everything in his house. He's given me control, access. You could say that he was the general manager over everything that he owned. All the property, all the livestock, the maintenance of the house, everything. But he said, there is one thing that he has kept back from me, and that is you, because you are his wife." But know what he said after that. He said the reason that he could not do this, because he could not commit this great wickedness and sin against God. He knew that this was going to be wrong, and he knew, and he tried to explain to her, "Listen, he has given me everything. For me to go and to commit this adultery and to lie with you would be a sin against God, not to mention Potiphar." But what does he say? And this is one of the things that I think as I was younger, I never realized. In verse 10, "So it was as she spoke to Joseph day by day." You think you have a rough working environment. You think you might have, you know, there are people that you work with or people that you go to school with that kind of annoy you, that are just kind of irritating because they have their little idiosyncrasies that you just can't get over. Imagine going to work every day, your wife or your boss's wife constantly trying to seduce you, and you constantly having to fight her off. And it says, day by day, she was constantly trying to wear Joseph down. And what does he do? It says there in verse 10, "But he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. He avoided her and he ran away." There is not a better example of someone that is fleeing the lustful desires of the flesh than Joseph. And that kind of goes into our next point. We know that it is possible, but we also know that it's not easy. There are certain temptations that come about. In 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 11, it says, "Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul." In Galatians chapter 5 and verse 16 and 17, it says, "I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary to one another, so that you do not think the things that you wish, that you do not do the things that you wish." Also, the lust of the eyes, those things that we covet or want, greed, and all of the subjects that go along with that. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, in verse 9, it says, "But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But you, O man of God, flee these things and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, and gentleness." We see this example, and we see that Paul, writing to Timothy, tells him this can be a major issue, this idea of greed. What about the pride of life? In 1 John chapter 2, and starting in verse 15, he says, "Do not love the world nor the things of the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust thereof. But he who does the will of God abides forever." How many times have we read this verse? How many times have we heard this verse? And we know it almost by heart. "For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world, and the world is passing away." We know that. We understand that. This world is not our home, but so often we forget it. In our daily walks, in our daily struggles, in all of the things that we get busy with, we forget. And we think that this world is something more than it is. We have to be looking for a future home. We have to be looking towards heaven. There's also the outside pressures. Those may have been the things that we may face inside of our hearts and in of our minds. But the things on the outside, the peer pressure. In John chapter 12, in verse 42, we see an example of peer pressure, or somebody not succumbing because of the worry. It says, "Nevertheless, that even among the rulers many believed him, but because of the Pharisees they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue, for they loved the praise of men more than the praise of God." This is something that we can relate to, maybe not with the idea of Pharisees and rulers, but we think about being popular in school. We think about maybe being more liked by more people at school or at college or at work or whatever it is. And I know that we're talking about the possibility of young people being spiritually minded at a young age. But this idea, this concept applies throughout your life. The young age, the reason that you want to be spiritually minded at a young age is because you have that foundation that you can grow on. There are many people that obey the gospel later in life. And a lot of times those people look back and wish that they would have made better decisions when they were younger. But nonetheless, that doesn't mean that a young person has to say, "Well, you know what, I know so-and-so. They obeyed the gospel when they were 50 years old. And they were able to live their life and with doing all of these things in the world. Why did they get so lucky and I have to be so good when I'm young?" Well, the first thing that needs to change there is your mindset. If you think that this world is fun and all of the things that in this fleeting world are fun, then you need to change something. You need to start studying and realize that this life is temporary. It is but a vapor. But when it comes to peer pressure, we understand this concept. Because even the world says that peer pressure can be a dangerous thing. And oftentimes when you see the world saying that peer pressure can be a difficult thing or a dangerous thing, then we know that it can be a very dangerous thing for a Christian. We know with drugs. We know with alcohol. We know with sex and all of the other things that come about in a young person's life. The peer pressure is there. And they are constantly pushing them. "Come on, just do it. It's not that big a deal. I know that you've told me you can't do it. I know that your parents say that you'll be disappointed. We're going to be staying at my house. We're not going to be going out. It's not a big deal. Let's just try it one time." And over time, maybe if they're constantly wearing you down, you may give in. Well, I would say in that situation, you need to get other friends. You need to stop hanging around with these influences. If you start to see that it's a struggle, you either need to tell them or you need to get away. Do exactly what Joseph did and run away. You have to rid yourself. The only reason that Joseph probably didn't leave sooner is because he was a slave. Potiphar owned him. But otherwise, he probably would have left a long time before. We know that peer pressure can be a difficult subject or a difficult temptation for young people. But you have to know that you have to make up your mind ahead of time. What about societal pressure? In 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 3, it says, "For we have spent enough of our past life time in doing the will of the Gentiles when we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In regard to these, they think it strange that you do not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you." Now, in the society that we live in, and it is constantly, you know, even me at the age that I'm in, I know what it was like when I was younger. I know that the ideas of, it seems like the society on how we viewed homosexuality and certain things in this world were, I thought were, you know, not as bad as they are now. And so you constantly grow up, and especially older people than me, they say, you know, when I was a kid, it was like this, or when I was younger, it was like this. The idea of this world changing, yeah, it's got technology, and we have certain temptations and certain desires that may be a little more accessible, but sin has always been around. The fact that we think that it's so much worse now and that we have it so much more difficult, you think back upon the Israelites. You think back upon Paul when he was in the midst of starting the church, and you think that it's difficult now? Here we have a building that we can come together every Lord's Day to worship God. We can have a Bible study any time that we want, but yet we say that it's more difficult now. I want to suggest to you that people that say that it is more difficult or too difficult for a young person to be spiritually minded, or even an older person to obey the gospel, it's a cop-out. It's a decision that they have made in their heart and in their mind that they do not want to, because they know the change that it's going to require. They know that there's going to come a time in their life that they may have to separate from their family. Somebody that they care about very much, they may have to leave them. It's going to be awkward at family get-togethers, or it's going to be difficult at work if they obey the gospel. They may have to get another job. All of those things. We may say, oh, there's no way, we can't do it. You have to make up in your mind. This idea in the pressure in schools and young people, you know, I've been there. I know what it's like in school when you're taught false doctrine, pretty much, about homosexuality, about evolution, all of those things. You have to be grounded. You have to know where you stand before you go in, because you're going to face those in the public setting. There is, I remember one time in college, which I hated science. I still do. Science is just not my subject. But I had a physics professor that stood in our class. And, of course, in college, it's even worse because, you know, every science teacher is a far-left liberal, almost atheistic in their ideas of how this world came about. But I had a physics teacher one time that stood up and said, any science professor or scientist that believes in evolution is an idiot. And, you know, I was sitting in the back of the room, and I just wanted to stand up and just give him a standing ovation. I could not believe that I was sitting here in a college class and I heard somebody say that. And the reason he did is because, and you see this a lot of times with physics professors, they understand the concept of this. There's no way that this world and all of the things in this world could come about the way that they say it did in evolution. But that's just a side note. The idea is that when we go to school, when we go to college, and when we start to prepare ourselves, we have to be educated beforehand. When it comes to the book of Genesis, creation, how God did it, well, the first thing that you need to understand is there a God? Do we believe that there's a God? So you put your nose in the book, you start to read, you start to have that faith, and you start to realize, yes, there's a God, therefore I believe him. And when he talks about the creation, then we know when we go to school and we hear these things, there are certain times in which you can take the professor aside and say, you know, I don't really agree with what you said. I'd be very careful in picking your battles, and don't try to make a big, you can do whatever you want. If you want to stand up in the middle of college class and call the professor out, I'm not saying that you're wrong, but, you know, I would just be very careful about that. The idea, though, is that you need to understand you have to be prepared going into it, and that starts at a young age. What about hypocrisy and apathy in the church? This is something that I think that young or older people think that young people are naive about. I've heard Uncle Brett tell me many times, and I've used it in sermons at 84th Street when he wasn't there, talking about dumbing down the gospel for younger people. And when he said it, I thought, that is exactly right. There is an idea that we have to make, and we see it in denominations, that if we don't have some type of gymnasium or some type of festival, trunk or treat or whatever it is, that there is no way that a young person is going to obey the gospel or going to enjoy learning about the Bible. There's no way. Their mind is just, you know, sporadic and it's just chaotic, and we better entertain them to get them in the door. Now, when he told me this, I was just going, I'm going to use that. You know, I didn't think that I was going to use it here. But the idea is that sometimes we think that children are more naive or more foolish than they really are. Do they make silly mistakes? Absolutely. But one of the things that they can pick up on is this idea of hypocrisy and apathy in the church. Because whether you know it or not, kids can tell whether their parents are spiritually minded or not. They may put on a good front, especially when a young person is quite a bit younger, when they're a child, and they see that their parents go to church every Sunday, and they see them go to church every Wednesday, and they, you know, attend the gospel meetings, and they're kind to people. But throughout the week, there's no talk about spiritual matters. There's no reading the Bible or asking them what they're studying. Once they get to a certain point, they're going to see that. And here you have parents that are trying to influence their children to be Christians, to be spiritually minded, but they're not seeing it in their own lives. And when Christians, young people, come to this church or come to any church, and they look to those that are older, those that are supposed to be the rocks, the foundations, the ones that they're supposed to be gaining this influence from, and they see this idea of indifference. You know, we come. You know, it's better. We're not a denomination, and we still show up. We're marked down. If you go look at the attendance, we're here every time. Young people pick up on that. When they start to go outside with them, and they start to say, well, you don't seem that spiritually minded. You never talk about spiritual stuff, or you never ask me about spiritual stuff. Young people pick up on that. So you older people know that you have a great influence on younger people. We know that. It's vice versa. Young people influence older people. They encourage them. Older people do the same thing. You have a great influence, and you need to take advantage of it. To overcome it, we have to know that there are weapons. First of all, the power in Christ. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 13 says there, a verse that we hear all the time, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But Paul, when he wrote this to the Philippians, of course, he was in a dire time, as he usually was when he wrote a lot of letters. And he said, I can do all things. He had all of his faith in Christ and in the power of Christ and the help from God. In Philippians chapter 2 and verse 12, he says, therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you both to will and to do for his good pleasure. And of course, we know that there is providential care from God. A verse that young people either need to at least know where it's at or memorize is this verse in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13. Because if there is any assurance, if there is any confidence that you have, that no matter how hard, how difficult the struggle that you are currently in is, read this verse. It says there in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, no temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it. There is a confidence that you have to have that every temptation that you come across, there is a way of escape. But you have to be looking for it. You have to know where it's at. And the way that you do that is you are constantly reading God's Word. You are constantly studying, constantly talking about it. When it is in your mind and in your heart and in your soul, you cannot keep from talking about the Word of God. You know what you each are interested in because that's usually the subject. I know that during the spring, when it comes to golf, I can give you every stat. You know, I'm just like, you know, that's what I follow. And somebody brings it up and I'll just follow a conversation. You know, I'm just like, oh, did somebody say golf? I'll talk about golf. Somebody says hunting during the fall. I'm like, I want to get in on this conversation. But so often at school, they say, did I hear religion? Ooh, I'm going to go the other way on this one. Did they say something about church? Then we go, I got to get on a phone call. Did they say something about, well, you know, the Church of Christ, they're the believers that they're the only ones going to heaven. They say, you know, no, that's not it. I don't really know how to answer that, but I don't really, that's not it. We don't think, well, I mean, I don't know. And they avoid the situation. Time and time again, we do this in one way or the other. We avoid it because we're worried about hurting the relationships that we have. The ironic thing about it is that if we care, if we truly love them, if we truly cared about them, then why wouldn't we tell them the gospel? Why wouldn't we tell them the truth? You think about those that you love, your family, your children, your parents. Most of them you've probably tried to talk to about the truth, and that's because you care about them and you love them and you want them to know the truth. But those that we come in contact with, we may be indifferent, but we don't want to hurt their feelings. We need to talk to them. And of course, you know, saying all that, there comes a certain degree of tact and professionalism when talking to someone about the gospel. And if there are certain occasions in which are better than others, I think that comes with age and a certain degree of judgment. But you have to know that there are opportunities that so often we pass up. We have to use the words, the tools that God gave us. His word, Psalm 119, verse 9, it says, "How can a young man cleanse his way? By taking heed according to your word. With my whole heart I have sought you. Oh, let me not wander from your commandments. Your word I have hidden in my heart that I might not sin against you." Prayer. Young people, you have got to get a good prayer life. There is nothing that you will see. I think it is probably one of the best gauges of someone's spiritual life is if you look at their prayer life. When they are strong spiritually, they are praying a lot. And when they are weak, if you ask them how often they pray, they say very little. My mom, I've told her this. There were times that I did not want to hear it, and I would be telling her, I'd be ranting and raving about something, you know, with my something at school or whatever, and she'd say, "Tyler, did you pray about it?" And I'd go, "I was hoping you'd tell you something else, Mom." There were times I would be like, "Well, no, I haven't done that yet. I'm trying to take care of it on my own." Now, of course, I look back now and I see the foolishness in that, and I say, you know, I wish I probably wouldn't have reacted, rolling my eyes when my mom said, "Did you pray about it?" But that's the idea. Young people don't think that you can pray to God and tell Him anything and everything that you need to tell Him. He cares. He wants to know. He wants to help you. But you have to pray and you have to read His Word. Also, the church. There is a great deal of encouragement and strength that you can get from a good church. Like one here in Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 12, it says, "Beware, brethren, lest there be any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily, while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. For we have become partakers of Christ, and we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast to the end." In order to gain spirituality in your youth, you're going to have to avoid the wild oats avoid the harvest sown by the wild oats. In Galatians chapter 6, in verse 7, we read, or it says, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For if he sows to the flesh, of the flesh he will reap corruption. But if he sows to the Spirit, he will of the Spirit reap everlasting life." And we have to know that we can gain the wisdom that comes from spirituality. James chapter 1, verse 5, it says, "But if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But let him ask in faith with no doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave of the sea driven and tossed by the wind. For let not that man suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways." We know that this idea of wisdom can make us happier. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 13, it says, "Happy is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding." You young people that are here today, and whether you categorize yourself as a young person, that's your call. But you young people, especially those that are going through junior high, elementary, junior high school, early college, and you're starting to find yourself, as they sometimes say. You're starting to figure things out for your own. You're starting to develop your own faith, or starting to realize what this world is all about. Know that it is certainly possible for you to be spiritually minded, but you have to commit yourself to it. And you older people, you parents of them, you encourage them. You give them confidence, and you let them know that whatever struggles they may come across in their life, you will be there for them. You will help them along the way. Because when a child has confidence in his parents, it goes a long way. You see a lot of problems with children because they have a horrible home life or the same struggle at home. You be there for your children, and it will go, and it will help them to be spiritually minded. I appreciate your attention this morning. We're going to close there and break for classes. Thank you.